It's December 10th, 2008, and I fear this transmission has been compromised, so I'm going to make this quick.
This is Idle Thumbs 9, and I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
And today we are joined by Chuck Jordan of Telltale Games.
Hello, Internet.
Hey, he bids welcome. So, yeah, Chuck, you, I guess, if you wanted to sort of talk a little bit about what you do at Telltale, and then also you go back to LucasArts, where you worked on, as I recall, Curse of Monkey Island and Grim Fandango?
That's right. Yeah, I started at Lucas working on Curse of Monkey Island and then Grim Fandango, like you just said. And then I had a little stint at a spinoff company from a bunch of ex-LucasArts employees.
Is that Infinite Machine?
That was Infinite Machine with Justin Chen and Yan Wang. They started that. And then, yeah, Electronic Arts for a few years, working on SimCity and 4 and The Sims. And then Disney. And Imagineering for a while. We did a really cool cell phone game at Epcot. And then
was that like an ARG, an ARG?
It was a little thing in Epcot, the World Showcase, where you walk around with a cell phone that was Kim Possible themed. It was very cool. I think they're going to install it permanently. And you get messages on your cell phone, and then you go to different places in the park, and things light up or start animating. It's a really neat project to work on. And yeah, then after that, I went to Telltale, where I'm working as a designer and writer on Sam & Max Season 2, just finished up the Strong Bad, and started working on other stuff.
Cool. Speaking of Imagineering, Jake, you were at Disneyland this weekend, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was at Disneyland this weekend. So that was cool.
Was that pretty sweet? I haven't been to Disneyland in a long, long time.
You should go to Disneyland.
Yeah.
It's got cool stuff. I could probably relate it to video games in many ways. But I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, one thing that is kind of cool with some of the newer rides that are going in is that they do incorporate interactivity in more extreme ways. But I mean, it's not super game related.
Is it actual genuine interactivity, or is it we fool you into thinking?
No, I mean, hey. I mean, it's like they're putting in sort of shooting gallery games and that sort of thing.
I see.
Like there's a Toy Story ride that you ride around on, which is
I've been on that. Yeah,
it's like I mean the games your car has a sort of cannon thing on the front that you can shoot off into the ride, but the ride is a series of screens that you know have real time 3D stuff going on them, and you're wearing the 3D glasses that I mean I guess have been in like the Captain EO ride and the Honey I Shrunk the Audience ride in Disneyland forever, but it's the same style 3D that's in like newer 3D movies.
Got it.
So. I was actually thinking, that was the one thing I was thinking about earlier, was that this made me really happy, that ride thing, but talking about it on a video game podcast, it's like, it's not actually, I mean,
It's funny you'd say that, Jake, because one of the, they've kind of had this push at Disney to do more game-like stuff and interactivity.
Because video games are the hot new thing. They speak to today's youth.
And they have been for 20 years, apparently, because the there was a thing at Epcot where you like choose whether you go through the it was called Horizons, and you choose whether you go through the ice level or the lava level or the space level.
Is that like a vote?
Yeah, yeah, like everybody in your little car votes.
Oh, so it's like an interactive movie.
You could
show an adventure or that movie, Mr. Payback. Do you guys remember that from like 1998 or something?
Was that the one where the audience all got to vote on what happened?
Yeah, like whether the principal gets bludgeoned with like a desk or a baseball bat.
Yeah, that took off.
Like, yeah, it was crazy. They showed it in theaters.
Did you see it?
No, I didn't. It was only certain theaters that had the equipment.
Your mom wouldn't let you see it.
Maybe she didn't. I mean, that's a feasible thing. I don't really remember. But well, actually, that's probably not the case. But anyway, I didn't see it. But I do remember reading articles and stuff about it in the newspaper. And I remember just the classic old lady being aghast at what was going on. Like, apparently old ladies went to see this and were horrified by the fact that it would stop with a guy like just punching out like a school teacher or something, and then it was like, please select if you would like her beaten to death with like a chair, B, a bat with a nail through it. Like, that might be slightly more extreme, but it was pretty much that. It was like, I remember there was a part when a teacher was knocked to the ground
and you beat
them. Well, I remember reading specifically an account of that. And it was crazy. And so, you know, maybe Disneyland is Mr. Payback.
Yeah, so the Toy Story ride is actually a hybrid of Toy Story and Mr. Payback.
It was Mr. Payback is a direct influence on, right. I think, all Sweet. The Disney projects.
How did you, I mean...
And the DVD release of Clue, I think, also was...
What?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. I like that movie a lot.
But that Mr. Yeah. Payback thing, that was like, I guess, like 3DO... Sega CD or like early era, it was like that was sort of the first generation of people getting confused about what it meant when with of games and film converging, where it's like film has like, lots of bad actors and blue screens and or I mean games games like the Daedalus Encounter or Burn Cycle, where it's just you click and then it sort of plays videos.
Well, I mean, one that was like the girls' dorm
Night Trap.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
But I mean, even if you go back to like Dragon's Lair, it's the same basic thing.
Right, but I mean, that wasn't like, there was all this hyped up shit when CD-ROMs first came out, and then people came to it from the other direction with Dr. Payback or whatever it's called, Mr. Frank.
Mr.
Frank. Dr. Payback.
Bob Payback.
Bob
Esquire.
Mr. Payback, whatever.
The second.
Lord Payback.
the third.
But all of those were failures, apparently. No matter if you came at it from a CD-based computer game.
Another thing confused. They took from video games. Yeah. The franchise.
Choose your own franchise.
Lord Payback of War.
When you were trying to get me to talk about Disneyland and video games, were you more talking about like classic Disneyland Pirates of the Caribbean stuff versus like Half-Life 2? Is that the direction you were expecting me to go in? Because that's
sure.
I have nothing to say about that, really, but
then
that's...
no. I guess sort of in that vein, there's also just... I guess the relationship of Disneyland to like Monkey Island, you know, and I just bring that up just because Chuck worked on Monkey Island 3. But
well, I mean, I think somebody at Telltale has the book of I can't even remember who wrote it or what it's called, but they basically compare theme park design to video game design, and there's a lot more similarities than you might think at first glance because you're trying to control the experience, you know, the player's experience and determine what they're going to see at each point in the ride. So for something like, you know, the Haunted Mansion, they did the whole thing where it always spins to show you exactly what they want you to see. Mm. And just, you know, the park as a whole, it's always like pulling you from one area to the next. And like, especially with adventure game, actually not even just any event, any game. You're always trying to say, you know, I want the player to be here. Or I want the player to stop worrying about this part of the world and move on to the next level. So I think there's a lot more overlap than you think at first impulse. The problem is that people at theme parks don't have super long attention spans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Versus gamers.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Versus gamers.
Sorry, what were you talking about?
Zing!
Hey! Oh, see? Shit!
That is Jake just got owned.
I actually really was confused for a minute.
Yeah. You got owned.
Yes.
Owned. Pizoned. The pizone is yours alone.
Anyway. Wow.
Jeez. Yeah, I might be done with that.
Oh.
We're being arrested, in case you were wondering. So maybe no show next week.
Every 2 or 3 weeks, we're arrested.
Yeah. Maybe our readers can post bail. Actually, I mean...
Send bail to questions at idlethumbs.net.
Yeah. Speaking of, since we're at sort of, I guess, a break at this point, welcome to new NeoGAF listeners. We seem to have gotten a considerable influx of new subscribers in the last few days, and it looks like part of it is actually, mainly, specifically this week, that seems to be due to a bit of an uptake on NeoGAF. So, hello there, folks. So, you may recognize me from someone who posts on your forums sometimes.
Yeah. If you're not from NeoGAF, defeat them by by bringing in tons of subscribers of your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can have a war that we will call. It might suspiciously be very close from 1 week to the next, but we promise we're being objective.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Do we want to talk about Goaty?
Goaty. I guess, yeah. Right. So the end of the year is coming up, and I guess since we're a thing on the internet that talks about games, we have to have some sort of game of the year thing.
It's a requirement. You got to sign a contract.
I don't know if it's awards or if we're just going to talk about some games and call it game of the year. But,
probably that.
Yeah.
So we registered a unique URL for this purpose. If you go to... goty.cx, that's goty.cx, you will see a cordial invitation from us to you to submit your picks for Game of the Year. So presumably we haven't entirely thought this through yet, but we thought that was a funny URL and that was the main reason we're doing these awards. So what we'd like is for you guys to send in your top picks for Game of the Year, with an explanatory paragraph. Don't make it too long, but you know, a few sentences.
We don't want to read your shit.
Well,
a few words is fine.
Yeah.
A page is fine.
You know,
if you put a ranking, a top 10 list. Marks in a creative
way. Also, please score the game that you're submitting.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, it's fine. You can use whatever grading scale you'd like.
All right.
Unscored is also acceptable for you indie snobs.
You can make up any kind of score system. So I would say probably limit it to like 3 games. Just because with the Ultra Boost contest, we had people who sent in like 40 flavors in like each. So probably for this one, let's say, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 games that you just, it doesn't have to be ranked or anything, just games you thought were cool this year and are deserving of some words. And probably if you don't write about GTA 4 or Fallout 3, there's probably a higher chance your thing will be selected because I suspect a million people will write about those games. So yeah, go to goty.cx and you can send an email and we will figure out some way to have our own official Games of the Year that will trump yours.
Right. In typical internet fashion.
In typical, right. Yeah. We are the correct voice of editorial authority.
The final say.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe you like the game. You want to tell us. So feel free to do that.
Cool.
Nick, you said you downloaded the RE5 demo, right?
Yeah, Resident Evil 5, yeah.
Is that a game
Japanese.
Of the year? The demo?
Well, that was
game
some of sort the of
year. That's GOTY, GOTY 2009.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Already making a claim.
Did you have to employ some sort of hacks to get that?
No, I just downloaded and put it on a DVD.
That's hacks?
You hacked it.
That's hacks.
You totally hacked it.
It's all in English, you know. It's really good, though.
This is an unexciting story.
No, it is. Yeah, there's no, like, you know, spy stuff going on. You just put it on a disc and
there's no spy
it.
Stuff going on. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about the game.
No,
I'm like, I wasn't expecting that. They didn't have that
the
in RE4.
First Resident Evil game without spy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you guys doing? Come on now.
Yeah, there's a stealth component. Yeah. No, no, it's pretty much Resident Evil 4. And you, but actually, I was happy because I haven't really been following it, but I heard some stuff, I guess probably before E3, about a cover system and all kinds of action crap that I thought they were going to put in this one. But
stealth.
It's, yeah, yeah.
Spies.
They just threw out a bunch of stuff like that.
So Resident Evil 4 with like racist QuickTime events?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I was actually kind of worried about that too, but I guess more in a general way. I just sort
about
of...
About the racism?
No. Well,
the QuickTime events.
Which is more offensive.
Yeah, right.
Game design. But no, I was just kind of generally worried about the direction of sort of just the controls and the feel and overall pace of the game in general, I guess. I was also sort of concerned.
It's pretty much identical.
Is it really?
Yeah. They did a few things that I really, really like.
No.
Well, I just playing the co-op, which is actually functional.
It was cooperative.
That's good. Because was actually one of the specific things I was worried about. I mean, I love co-op. I think most people do agree that it's pretty awesome.
So by and large, you were worried about Resident Evil 5. So
yeah.
Nice to say.
Well, I was worried that the co-op would change kind of the tenor of the game in a way. Like Resident Evil 4, I thought really succeeded as being...
You were worried that the co-op would be like the Simpsons game where you jump on and the other guy shoots and spin around with vacuum cleaners and stuff.
Yeah, I was worried about that. But mainly that,
well,
that
it like, would... I mean, it's like Alone in the Dark co-op.
Right, exactly. Mm.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do it? You're no longer... I mean, you had sort of an NPC buddy for some of Resident Evil 4, but that's not... That's different than a dude who's like hanging out with you and being like, sweet. Oh, man, look at that shit. Oh, man, I fucking own that zombie or whatever.
Resident Evil with headset would be the most lame thing in the world.
Right, that was sort of
this
part of my...
This shit's fucked up. Gay. Like, what? No, come on. Just like make scary breathing sounds or something. Not like that sounded wrong. Sorry.
Well, see, I don't know. For me, like Resident Evil, I was never really afraid of. Like, it was never a game that I played. You know, like
to scare to yourself.
Yeah, to get scared or like. I mean,
you never had a soul, is what you're saying.
I don't know.
Emotions.
Well, it was always more of a light, you know, kind of in depth action game.
A rip rollicking.
Really, I mean, it's always been kind of like, you know, action. And, oh my god, someone just jumped in the window, and then
it's not like
it's like Silent Hill where you're just constantly freaked out.
That co-op would be worse.
Yeah, Silent Hill co-op would be the worst idea ever.
I mean, even the earlier Resident Evils are more of a cheesy horror than a
real the master of unlocking.
The master of unlocking. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it works really well. And actually, they did a couple of things, just sort of small changes to the way that it controls it. It really sort of upped the tension. Like, you don't ever go into the menu now to sort of switch weapons. So it's all on D-pad. And so you never have that moment where you're, you know, you're running from like 50 zombies and then you hit pause and you just like go get a drink and you're just like, oh man, everything's fine. You know, like I'll just switch my gun and this shotgun and just like, you know, blow his head off. Like you have to like fumble for your weapon and stuff. So it actually, and they, as far as the co-op goes, they split you off quite a bit. So, and they do it in sort of intelligent, kind of interesting ways. So it's not, you know, you're not always just sitting there with two guys back to back, just like, you know, army of two, you know.
Can you can you give each other like daps?
Terrorist daps. right. Yeah, like the,
because you can do that in Army of Two.
Right. Yeah, the pats.
Yeah.
What? A little butt pat.
Yeah. A little. Yeah.
But what they should have done with the inventory system is just had the old briefcase and stuff, but just real time. So you're just completely fucked. Right. You're playing like inventory Tetris while zombies are mauling you. that would be tense. You want to talk about tension? That shit is
have
tense.
Have to fit it all in the briefcase. Inopportune.
Yeah. Be like anal retentive zombie hunter. Right. Yeah. No, wait, guys. I got to get this right. Hang on.
I mean, where's
worse,
my...
they've added a physics system to the briefcase. So.
It's like the Little Big Planet Tetris level, if you guys have seen that.
Yeah.
Where the blocks kind of like smoosh in between the other ones and kind of get a little out of kilter like that. God damn it. Physics
Your guy knocks the table and the whole
On the PS3 version, you have to use the six axis to rotate your weapons into position in your briefcase. Why don't they make that game, Capcom? Yeah. Come on, man. Get with the times. Everyone loves six axis motion sensing. Please. Yeah. That's cool, though. I mean, I'm actually glad to hear, because I think I had talked to you about it sort of post E3, and I think we shared at least a couple of concerns.
Yep.
So that's good to hear, because I haven't played the demo yet.
Does the guy say 5 on the main menu?
Yes, he does.
Yes!
Oh, sweet.
I was actually afraid at first. I was like, I don't think he's going to say it.
Resident Evil 5!
I don't think he's going to say it. He's like, Resident Evil.
5!
But does he say 5?
Yeah, he does say 5. Okay, yeah, there's a 5. Yeah.
No, he just says Resident Evil.
Resident Evil. Yeah.
It's a reboot.
5.
Little guy pops in and then the cane like drags him away.
Oh man, wacky.
It's a wacky game. And that's coming out pretty soon actually.
Yeah, beginning of March.
Yeah. For some reason I went a while thinking it was coming out this holiday season. And then it wasn't. I told the guy at work that it was, so. Cuz I thought so it was.
That guy doesn't know anything.
Oh. Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's coming out in like February, March. Okay. I saw an interesting game today that do you guys know Aspyr, the publisher?
Yeah. They publish Mac games and don't want their summary to be "we publish Mac games."
Right. Well, I wrote that they do in a news thing today, so. But they actually are starting up a internal development studio that makes their own games, and the first one they're making is the first one they made was an SAT game. So go out and buy that immediately, but to follow it up, they're making a crazy game codenamed Treasure Trove that is a thing that reads nearby Wi-Fi signals and translates them into unique treasure items that you can then manipulate and like use in a Mario Paint like
is this an music iPhone game
composer thing? No, it's for DS. I should have mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
It uses the DS's. Right.
You only get that it's one from your neighbor.
It's for laptops. Yeah. It's Xbox 360. it's a DS game. And you can do the thing where you leave the door closed. Jesus. You leave the lid. What do you call it?
I can't call it a door.
The door. You close the door on the DS.
Drawbridge.
It will continue to pick up signals and add items to your game. It's kind of like a weird pseudo procedural ARG version of Animal Crossing.
sure that's how it was billed.
Could you say that one more time? I don't think Merrick Bronspring's head exploded all the way.
I said, well, let me see if I can remember what I said. I said it's like a pseudo procedurally generated ARG version of Animal Crossing on the DS.
Yeah. Mm. Somewhere a blog is ejaculating.
So it's pretty interesting. It's the kind of thing where only the DS could conceive or spawn such a bizarre thing. It's really, I don't know. It's interesting though. I mean, it's the kind of the way the designer talked about it was sort of like you can just sort of have this in your. It's actually fairly fascinating. I don't know how much this will bear out among real humans, but he was saying that, you know, with his build, he finds himself like walking different routes than he usually does, because he just sort of has that thing going, and it's just sort of like a bonus weird. Where he'll just walk on the other side of the street, or like take a right here instead of three blocks later, or like walk down sort of this side street.
If
or,
the DS had an achievement system, people would do that fucking all over
true.
The place.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, what would suck is if like if your Wi-Fi is just happens to be the one that generates, you know, the super mega bonus item.
Right.
So you got just nerds hanging outside your apartment at all hours. Yeah.
That NIC address. Right? Yeah. Dude, wake up!
Yeah. Like, apparently it does generate it specifically from the actual point, so it's not a random thing. So, I mean, theoretically, everyone who goes to a given access point will get the exact same item. So, yeah, I mean, what you described could very well occur in a horrible event. But it's interesting. It's an interesting concept. I'll be curious to see how much actual adoption it gets. It's a very passive game in that respect. But then, you know,
it makes you wonder if they actually have gone out and deliberately, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of someone whose house they would deliberately sabotage. But they go and sort of get like the hash of whatever,
right.
Like Will Wright's router outside his house, and just
the ultimate weapon is the White House. You have to like
sneak up like
yeah.
Yeah. God,
it's kind of like that. What is it? Monster Rancher? No,
there is that
takes your CD, generates a monster based on it that you can do the Pokemon thing with.
Mm. We're uninformed.
That probably exists.
It's not really mine.
There's like a whole series of them. Come on, guys.
It might be Monster Rancher.
I thought this was a thing on the internet, kind of about video games.
Yeah,
we don't play video
anyway,
games.
There's some
or know
game
about
theoretically
them.
That I've heard about. No, that it takes your like CD code. And
is it Pokemon with the e-reader?
It's kind of like that, but it actually just takes a CD.
It's an electronic reader.
But this sounds cooler because you actually have to walk.
Yeah. It's physical activity of some kind. It's what you do after your Marathon Zelda Twilight Princess sessions where you've melted into your couch. But it also kind of reminded me of the thing you mentioned that you worked on with, what was it, King Possible?
Yeah.
I mean, does that sound similar at all to what you guys were doing, or is it a separate kind of thing?
It's extremely similar. It's
a ripoff even.
Oh,
their
man.
Thing is a ripoff of us.
That's what I'm talking Hello. About. Yeah, please.
No, because there's this...
this is like Lands of Lore quality.
Wizard.
Oh, no, I was thinking of Limbo of the Lost. My bad. Lands of Lore is a real game.
Yes, they took our direct assets. Actually, our game was...
I was wondering why Kim Possible was in this game, but it wasn't licensed or anything? Weird.
It was weird. Well,
that photo of Epcot was in this game.
The Kim Possible game that we did actually used all art from Phantasmagoria.
What? The Roberta Williams
game?
Yeah. Wow.
It was kind of... We didn't think anybody would notice.
Are you serious?
No.
What are you... What?
I don't know. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be... How can that be real?
In my dreams, that was real.
There's just this sort of flat-shaded Kim Possible on top of some like full-motion like, video from a CD-ROM game.
Yeah, like blood scoop. Seeping through like a cheesecloth mask or some shit. Whatever happened in that game, I don't know. Those games always had like a face pressed into like fabric screaming on the cover. There were like 18 of those covers in the 90s. Yep.
It's like very Freddy Krueger. Nine of those being Gabriel Knight games.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I think both Gabriel Knight and Phantasmagoria had those
screaming
covers.
Face.
Yeah,
Gabriel Knight, the rubber sheet within.
Yeah, the beast within.
Mm. They had this.
I'm really disappointed that it wasn't Phantasmagoria. Anyway, continue.
There's a group of people, and I know they had like some kind of conference or fest or hullabaloo something in New York City.
Confest Blue.
It was for interactive. I forget what they call it. It's like physical interactive games, and one of them was called Plunder. I think it's like flick.
Is this like LARPing?
Not. It's the basic idea, but it's more computer. It's somehow more related to computers and somehow less.
It's
geeky.
LARPing, but oh.
Yeah.
Okay. The opposite direction I was expecting.
It's the
okay.
paradox of being okay. more computer related but less geeky than LARPing.
Okay, fair enough.
There's one game called Plunder that was spelled Flickr style with no E, and you had a laptop
2.0.
with a Wi-Fi connection, and you would just go, they'd have like treasure buried around New York City.
Mm, like
geocaching. Oh, I saw this.
And you'd go around with your laptop and it would say, oh, you just, you know, uncovered this thing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like what you're talking about for the DS, but this is like a very early.
That was very coordinated and sort of local. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to track stuff down. And
And there were actual real things in the real world that you found, right?
I think it might have been just on the thing.
I remember seeing like a JPEG.
Yeah. But they did stuff too. at that same Confestabaloo or whatever, they had a game where
spread the word Confestabaloo.
You had to go around
put it on the internet
and be. I forget exactly what the rules were, but it had like nothing to do with computers, and you just had an assignment like you have to be nice to people in a certain way.
Kill this person.
And it was like, yeah, it was supposed to be like a spy game. Like there's some assassination game that apparently had been at earlier Confestabaloos, but this one they said, we're going to twist it around by you have to be nice to people. And so you have to like get the biggest group of followers at the end of it instead of being the last survivor. I think that's awesome. I would love to see a geocaching game. That was the first thing I thought of when I saw the iPhone.
You could easily do that. Yeah, with the iPhone, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break. Video
game. Give each other butt pats?
Oh, yeah.
What, did they actually... Butt pats?
Yeah!
I didn't know.
I'm making that shit up.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know so far as butt pats. I thought it was like good job, but not like.
There was a group that came out and they were like, "This game is too homosexual."
Wait, really?
Yeah. It was like last week or something. Yeah, like it's all these undercurrents and you know.
I thought they were, but when I read the headline, I was like, "Yeah, well, they're overreacting," but they're giving each other butt pats.
It's clearly reach there. Around. I mean, it's obviously.
I was really hoping that.
Press Y.
I was honestly really hoping that with that game, like they would just take that all the way, like just go completely into sort of like campy,
like nipple tweak,
possibly gay land. Like, but they didn't. Yeah. They always pulled back.
They would always, you know, they'd be like.
they would always sort of insert a little like just joshing you, man. You fuck yeah.
So it was like it was like a bro butt pat, not a regular butt.
But there was so much like just on the cusp of sort of innuendo.
I mean, it was an ambiguously gay duo game.
Right.
And are you sure that they didn't do the oh just kidding, man, and then when the other one walks away, you see the guy just like linger looking after him.
Like, see, that's exactly the stuff I wanted. That's exactly the stuff I wanted out of that
twinkle.
Game.
Like,
that would have
been
a whole extra hilarious layer.
Or like the nervous, I was just kidding too. Yeah.
See, why didn't you design that game? That's why didn't you stick around at EA and make that game? That's what I wanted out of Army of Two.
Maybe this is why you left EA. Yes, after your Army of Two design was burned.
They rejected my
100-page
design document that
all this is weird flirting. Yeah. I don't know. Where's the game?
Yeah.
Butt pat.
I had the entire appendix on the reach around maneuver. It was a quick time event.
That sounds pretty sweet.
The whole controller wrapping is like
why
Army of two. Army of three. Yeah. I think there actually is an Army of Three that they're making.
Yeah.
With Joe Pesci.
Yeah, they're making a sequel.
No, they should
He's
do
popping
it all
in out of the corner. Jake just imitated Joe Pesci wordlessly. That was not helpful, Jake.
Sorry. It's impossible to describe that horribleness of him on the Lethal Weapon 3
Lethal
poster
Weapon,
peeking in, which, weirdly enough, was used again for the poster for Monster in Law.
What?
I forget. Monster in Law is one of my great hatreds.
You hate that
movie
poster.
Posters, yeah.
So go Google image search the Monster in Law poster.
Yeah.
Check that out.
What a piece of shit. Man, speaking of shitty advertising, this is not games, but whatever. I was watching you guys know like when trailers for TV shows or movies intercut like voices from the show with the thing the narrator's saying to create a bullshit dialogue.
Right.
You know, where it's like, this movie won a Oscar, and then someone in the movie goes,
what?
There, NBC has been blanketing their stuff with that kind of, like, I'm watching all the news on their streaming website, and between every goddamn segment, there's one of those bullshit 30 Rock commercials where it's like, we won how many Emmys? And then Alec Baldwin goes, 5. No! 6. No! Because they're clearly like chopping it out of the middle of a sentence. Like, 7 Emmys! Whoa! Like, what the fuck? If you fucking despise this ad, you might like 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Like, how do they determine that the audience who likes that show is going to like that kind of shit?
Yeah.
Anyway, video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of weird advertising, I got some.
Nice.
You like my seg there?
That's a good seg.
Seg.
Anyway. I got these weird emails the other day. And I thought they were spam. Like, at first I thought, well, I just got through my spam filter. Like, they're like,
enlarged your penis. It was video game marketing?
Yeah, yeah. It was,
so, you know.
But yeah, I clearly like the same email five different times in my inbox. And so I clicked on one of them and then I realized, oh, it's from Capcom PR. And I still thought it was spam because it was just a giant block of text. And it was the same phrase repeated over and over and over again. And then a link just like in the middle of the block. And the phrase was, it came from Kinjuju. It came from Kinjuju. It came from like, over and over and over. And then in the middle, just like,
was it the copy paste where like at the end of it came from Kinjuju? There was no space between Kinjuju and it.
Yeah. 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 No. Yeah. It looked like just a mess. At first I thought, okay, like the line breaks aren't in or something. Right. Like I was looking for the option to like fix the fucking like HTML, but there was no option.
Did they include stock tips at the bottom in a GIF?
Yeah, but no, it turns out it's some like ARG, you know, that you go to like this Resident Evil 5 site and there's all this crap like written on the wall.
Is it one of the ones that's just intended for press, like with the hope that you will spread it via your internet website?
Possibly.
Yeah.
So is Kinjuju the name of a place or a person in Resident Evil 5?
I don't know.
Definitely came from there,
I didn't wave the flash candle around long enough to like discover the secret of Kinjuju.
Yeah. I got an actual physical mail. Actually, speaking of Capcom, Capcom sent me a postcard
from Kinjuju.
From Kinjuju. I was wondering what that postcard was. They sent me a thing, and it was like it had like the 5 that I didn't at the time realize was the Resident Evil 5. It said that plus Bionic Commando equals 1216 or something, and I'm like, weird.
Metal Gear.
So, like, does that mean 1216?
5 plus Bionic Commando equals a Metal Gear?
Metal Gear? That actually sounds plausibly like something Hideo Kojima could put into a game.
Yeah.
Bionic Commando plus 5, Metal Gear? You know, why not?
Yeah.
A Metal Gear could be considered a Bionic Commando. But no, so I got this thing and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Like, does that mean, do I subtract 5 from 1216? Like 1211 equals Bionic Commando? Like, what the hell is that?
Solving
mean?
An algebraic like, equation. Yeah,
that's what I was trying to
solve for Bionic Commando.
Marketing people never understand rebuses. They just, that's the thing that I hate the worst about them.
Yeah, screw those people. So I, you know, so I was like, okay, that's stupid. So I threw it away. And then later just got a regular email that was just like, we're having a press event on the 16th. So, like, what? Thanks for the weird, goofy teaser. Like, why didn't you just say that? Like, actually, I guess on that note.
It was on the 11th, actually.
One of my coworkers got this series of, like, weird things in the mail prior to E3. That was clearly intended to be like a solve this crazy mystery. You're at the center of a conspiracy and only you can solve it. But it was apparently just like some company doing like an education game that just was trying to fool people into thinking they had like a high profile game announcement at E3. And like a couple days before E3, they just kind of sheepishly call them up and they're like, so that stuff you got in the mail, would you like to come to our press event at E3?
That's awesome.
And he was like, no. See you later. Yeah. Apparently, no one went to their event, which made me feel kind of bad. But I don't know. When you pull that crap, like even now, some company is sending me these postcards from crazy places like India and Russia and stuff. They're all signed Max, and they're all like, "I'm in front of the Taj Mahal. It's a wacky place." Signed Max. And what do these people? What do they want me to do? Do they think I'm going to go on the internet and like find their crap? I don't care. Send me a press release. So.
Oh, the magic journalist. Just send me a press release.
It's not
man.
Journalism. It's just bullshit. It's just shit. Their marketing. It's stupid.
Yeah.
You eat that shit up.
I guess I do.
I think it'd be awesome just on the off chance that you like follow the weird links from one of those things and then you show up at the place and it's all like the Black Lodge from Twin Peaks and there's like people
there's
walking around.
There's a dancing
around.
Midget in it.
Yeah. Everybody's talking in reverse and you're like, oh, finally they paid off. It's not just some dude.
Then in reality, your soul is damned bottle. To hell. And
that would be
sucked.
The best part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you show up at the payphone, and you are actually just carried away in a black helicopter and experimented on for 2 weeks. It's fucking horrible.
It's the worst prison man ever.
They just hold your eye open with clamps and show you Call of Duty footage.
Oh, God. At a certain point, Activision's going to have to start making me do that.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway. So, we're officially announcing the Idle Thumbs ARG.
Yeah.
Or are we? Listen to this episode for clues. Or do you?
We have like a weird inadvertent ARG that is like naturally forming out of this strange network of URLs that now point to our site.
Yeah.
In fact, we have a new one this week. If you go to 8bitcock.com, Pancake Humper has set up a wonderful like 1 second splash screen for you. So that was pretty great. So
yeah.
Thanks to him.
Yeah. Thanks.
Also, there's of course goty.cx.
Yeah. Also,
that's ours.
Goty.cx.
So we now have idlethumbs.net, idlethumbs.com, videogames, videogames, videogames.com, vgvgvg.com, explode-mode.com, 8bitcock.com, goty.cx. Any others?
That's all that comes to mind.
Idlethumbs?
Yeah, he said those. Yeah, I think that's it for now.
You don't have idlethumbs.org?
We're not a nonprofit. Mm. Actually, I guess we are.
We're not a registered nonprofit.
We're sure not making any money off this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Mm. Yeah, so
that's what I was saying. That was the fun part of URLs is the when you type in .com and it changes to .org for you, it's like it's scolding you. It's like, we're not making money off this.
Yeah.
You pig.
You're making enough to buy two domain names.
Ours changes to .net if you type in .com, which I guess scolds you for not knowing we're a network
provider.
Isn't that what they're originally for? Actually?
I think so. It's not scolding you, or it is scolding you rather, for knowing that we couldn't afford .com in 2004.
Well, in 2004, there was a guy who had it.
Yeah.
He owned it for real reasons.
We paid him off.
Jake is just made again, the quote gestures. Yeah. Why do you keep doing this? You're blowing it, man.
I held the napkin in my hand in case it made a sound effect when I did it.
It didn't. No. There was no sound.
Did you want to talk about EA?
Oh, yeah. So, actually, yeah.
So, fuck you guys. We're going to talk about EA for a little while.
There was some depressing news today.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing.
Electronic Arts, I guess, saw worse holiday sales than they were expecting. Games like Mirror's Edge and what else, Nick? I think you know more about this than I do.
Yeah, Mirror's Edge, Rock Band 2. I think Need for Speed was mentioned by an analyst, but I'm not sure they specifically called it out in the call today. But I think mainly people are focusing on Mirror's Edge and kind of going, is EA now going to look at maybe rethinking their new IP strategy?
Well, didn't they specifically say something like, we're focusing on the hits now?
Clearly, they didn't. No, they specifically, Rick Tellick specifically said, we're not changing our strategy.
That's good.
Of course, he sort of mentioned that, we'll be doing a Dead Space 2 and a Mirror's Edge 2. So, it's like, those new IPs are now franchises. So it kind of... back on itself, but
well, they said something like they and I would believe them saying this, that they like tripled the number of 80 or higher Metacritic rated games in the last year. Yeah. Like they went from like 6 to 18 or some ridiculous thing, which I would completely believe because I really think EA has put out a lot of really good games this year.
Yeah.
But it is sort of hilarious that meanwhile, as Activision continues to become ever more just like the lumbering Goliath of yearly franchises, EA is like, we're put out a few original IPs. Oh, I guess it doesn't really work.
Well, they mentioned
Mirror's Edge 2.
They mentioned the strong reviews of Mirror's Edge, and I think that game got Mirror's like a 79 Edge. Metacritic
rating.
This
is totally like Ubisoft with 2005 style.
Ubisoft 2004
or 2004, with Sands of Time 13, Beyond Good and Evil, a couple other things. And then Prince of Persia. Wasn't Splinter Cell?
The Chaos Theory was one there, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually,
the first one was right.
Yeah, it was Splinter Cell was right then, and then Splinter Cell and Prince of Persia both did well, apparently, because we have a million of those.
The one interesting quote that they mentioned, though, in relation to Mirror's Edge was just speaking about what they'll do for a follow-up. And he said something like, we want to this time, we'll do one, but this time we're going to marry a strong IP with a strong business plan. And I don't know what that means. I don't really know what that means either. I don't know. The cynic in me makes that sound like, okay, we're going to put guns in the game or something. You know what I mean? Like,
I guess
like we need to market this better to, some way to
Madden.
Like, right. Yeah. Well, that's, I mean,
plays your EA favorite
Sports
NFL
is like the
quarterback
only thing that they're not cutting.
In Mirror's Edge head coach. No, I mean, Mirror's Edge really seems like one of the strangest kind of releases of this year to me, just in terms of in terms of the weird disconnect between like having such a great gameplay mechanic and sort of treating it so poorly presentationally, yeah. and just having such a dumb sort of surrounding, like all the cutscene stuff was so goofy, and like you don't really actually want people shooting at you that much, despite what Cliff Bleszinski thinks, I guess, mm-hmm. about that game. Like it's, you know, that was a weird one because I feel like they kind of got burned for reasons that are legitimate. Like that game,
yeah.
in reality was fucked up.
Yeah.
But I hope they don't take the wrong lessons from that.
Yeah.
Like the lessons to draw from that should be, let's identify what actually did work about this game and then hone in on that, as opposed to, I guess people don't like things that are new. So, well, Madden 85.
Right.
Yeah. The retro Madden.
It's kind of weird because like Dead Space in there, it's an odd one because it's really the gameplay, actual gameplay is pretty solid. I mean, I thought it was actually really fun to play. They're just super polished, and there was parts in there that were genuinely creepy, but everything about it is just so incredibly cliched. So if that's their example of original IP is a first-person shooter where you're set on a haunted spaceship.
Third person,
right. You're just barely third person. That's the thing. The main character is such a cipher that I didn't realize that I wasn't seeing it.
Fair deep.
Yeah, but if that's like what counts as, you know, their original IP, that's probably a mistake. It seems like they should be.
That game sold really well.
EA money and. Yeah, I mean, and it's a fine game. I'm not saying anything bad about it. It's just that's not like the bastion of originality.
Yeah.
Like if they come out with Dead Space 2, it's not like, oh my God, they've, you know,
yeah,
they've bastardized the franchise right. they developed.
That's a fair point. Although I think that even just in like investing in the gameplay systems they did, I'm not going to fault them for that. I mean, when you look at their main competitor being Activision, like it's hard for me to look at Dead Space and be like, you guys didn't take enough risks with this, because it's true. It's a safer property just from a sort of presentational standpoint. Okay, you're a sci-fi guy who shoots aliens. Like, great. That's certainly not novel. But I'm glad that they at least put out a game that was a new game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It at least plays differently than most games.
Standards!
Yeah, I know. How depressing is that? But I you know, yeah. I mean, when you look at, honestly, like, practically speaking, I don't know.
The problem for EA is they just didn't have. I mean, if you look at those games, you know, there weren't many that really topped the charts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what they're talking about now is like, okay, if people only have so much money to spend in this economy, they're going to look at the top 10 games, you know, for that month, and probably buy, you know, one of the upper five, and so they just sort of get left out if you've got, you know, if you just don't have that, you know, if you're not in that upper tier,
that is
then
a fairly
you're pretty
frightening
much screwed.
Thought though.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If in this economic downturn, if that's what it means for sort of game budgeting and green lighting, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, for companies like EA and Activision, I mean, there's the fact that, you know, they pretty much have to have a big hit to, you know, satisfy their stockholders and everything. That doesn't mean we're not going to see any, you know, any new stuff coming out. But I think there's like a tendency for a lot of gamers to say, you know, why can't you just come out with the most original thing possible, and any sacrifice you make is like lowering your standards. And I don't know, my take is getting to be more that, you know, Dead Space it was actually fun, and it was just really polished and well done, and there is a little, you know, a little bit of originality in the design, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
Just the whole severing the limbs thing, and I mean, I hate that it's so cliched, but it's kind of, that seems to be like a better starting ground for EA than
trying to reinvent video game narrative.
Yeah, or doing just like doing like the Madden 8 or whatever they're on now. I think they're probably way past 8.
They're way past 8.
That's like EA Sports. We're way past 8.
I mean, I think they've released, what, like 2008 of those Madden games so far?
Probably.
Zing!
Yeah, 2009 is coming out.
No, yeah. They didn't release one in 0 AD.
Oh, okay. It was kind of like that weird...
out of respect.
How do you... Yeah.
They brought a copy of Tecmo Bowl to the Nativity.
Yeah.
We heard you can cheat in this one.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. It seems like there's this whole other sphere of, you know, what what you need to have for, you know, big companies like EA and Activision that, the only reason I thought of it is because I remember thinking, that, you know, LucasArts kept selling out, and they did, but they had this weird balance of supposedly it was supposed to work like, you know, we have the licenses that are making all our money, and then we can funnel that, the cash from that into our original IP. And it's supposed to be the perfect
model. That never happens.
Yeah.
No one ever does that.
But yeah, they gave so much lip service to it. And all of us who were really optimistic were like, oh yeah, you know, one day they're going to keep doing that. And then at some point, somebody always says, well, you know, we're a pretty big company. And
we could keep that money.
These super original ideas just aren't selling that well. So yeah, I don't know what the answer is.
Well, yeah, in Hollywood, they have the, you know, the award pictures, you know, the, what do they call them? A tentpole, I don't know. What's the term where
tentpole.
I don't think those are the award pictures. Right?
there's a word that,
yeah, the one that opens up in the summer.
To Oscars.
Like a prestige picture?
Yeah, prestige.
Oscar
pictures.
Bait?
Yeah. Right, yeah, Oscar bait. Yeah, sorry, I mean,
yeah, I thought you were actually talking about a tentpole.
But I mean, there's nothing, you know.
The high point that we aspire to is Metacritic.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no.
Yeah. Right, I mean, sweet, you might get name dropped at the Spike VGA.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no.
But you could be anything. The most ridiculous games are the games that take home pretty much any award that isn't the BAFTA. And even those are kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I mean, Game Developers Choice Awards are the only awards that I ever read about that seem relevant. The
Game Developers Choice Awards are pretty much uniformly great.
Says Chris Ramo of Gamma Sutra. No.
I've said that for a while. But they don't get any coverage really outside of kind of like
wasn't
a
there like a
small...
20-minute excerpt on G4 last year?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't watch G4.
I don't know. I thought they were there. They made a big deal out of it. Anyway, whatever.
That's cool. I think GameSpot used to stream it. I don't know if they still do.
Whatever.
Yeah. But Game Developer Choice Awards are pretty cool for those of you who don't follow those. I do. I mean, I guess I am biased, but...
But yeah, there's
take
no,
it from me.
Unlike the film industry, there's no prestige to be had in any capacity for doing anything of merit, so no one makes prestige games.
That's what
I was getting. Also, you don't get that. I just couldn't think
of the word.
Because, I mean, I think also with Oscar pictures, there is actually a financial incentive. Like, any time a picture wins a bunch of Oscars, it gets demonstrable.
Oh, yeah. They especially if it's still in theaters.
They put it in theaters. They'll often put it back in theaters. Yeah. Like, they'll release it again just for that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you could never do that with games.
No.
It is kind of crazy how short games stay on shelves these days.
Yeah.
At least how short they stay on shelves in any sort of meaningful way. Also, I was at GameStop, the store, the other day, and the Games for Windows display is just getting sadder and sadder all the time. It's now facing away from you towards the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see the plug unplugged, like resting on a shelf.
Like, is that freeze? What's the phrase on the
seeing
thing?
Is believing.
Seeing is believing, and the monitor is not on. It's just blank. There are no. Do they even sell PC games?
I took a picture.
I couldn't even see a rack of like PC games.
I had to look for it because it's not actually near.
Yeah, it's
the
not
thing
near
that
the
says games
display.
For Windows.
Yeah,
and it's sort of just like a grody shelf with like the equivalent of like dog-eared boxes, like bent. Like, what are people doing? It's juggling with them. Like, how do these things get in such shitty shape? It's really weird.
They're also the games you can't trade back in.
right.
Yeah. So exactly. It's even more ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Someone's just sort of throwing them around like during breaks. I don't know.
I think they stand on them to get to the console games. The
yeah.
It's the certification.
A fitting
process.
Metaphor.
What? Before leaving the factory, a game for those employees comes and kicks every pallet.
Yeah.
Is what we think of PC games. buying PC games from them actually sucks. Because they, in addition to all that, they put a sticker on the cardboard.
But you are not going to shrink wrap the game, and then even though it's like the collector's edition that's got this really nice case, we'll put a huge, huge price tag on it. But whatever.
That you have to like carefully take off, or it will rip the top layer of paper from the cardboard. What? Like, why does
Which
this happen?
Which is infuriating.
I guess my pristine collection has been torn asunder.
Yikes. Your mouth gets huge when you do that voice.
Oh, yeah?
Like an om-nom.
Yeah. Now I know.
Don't say om-nom.
I'm just throwing it there for you, Jeff.
What? I'm not even going
to
reply to you.
They love om-nom?
Stop it.
Those people?
They don't know, but you know, right now I'm a Final Fantasy VII character who's doing an animation over and over again in honor of the NeoGAF visitors.
Oh man,
you're a looping
they're
GIF.
All gonna unsubscribe yeah, right now. We're anyway,
yeah, it's okay. Point.
So we can move on to some contest winners.
Yeah,
you guys want to do that? Or actually, you know what? Let's do reader mail first and then close out with contest winners. I can't make up my mind. In fact, you know what? Never mind. Let's do that.
All proposed orders will be reversed.
All right, so here we go. Ian Tong writes, I'd like to start with a question. How do you guys think that storytelling in video games is... Oh, I think this is also Senior Super Douche, if you guys remember that guy. He made our awesome VGB.
The guy from the forums, not the actual...
Right, not actually right. Noah Hiller.
Not the true yeah. Senior.
VGVGVG.com, the work of this guy. I'd like to start with a question. How do you guys think storytelling in video games is different from other types of storytelling? What techniques might work well in film or literature but do not translate well into games or vice versa? He also then included an example about Dreamfall, which he thought sort of fell flat in its goal to be, I guess, sort of like a literary equivalent of a video game. And I would agree with him on that. Jake mm-hmm. and I tried to play that game one time, and it didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't last an hour.
We stopped right after the like kickboxing training.
Right. Like, why was that there? I don't know.
If you liked The Longest Journey.
And one of the reasons we waited, I guess, till today to ask this is because maybe our guest had something to say about it. Putting you on the spot.
No, I don't.
All right.
Really? All right. That's too bad.
No, what's the question?
It's about video games and stories or something.
Yeah.
You make those.
So what works in games but not in movies and
vice versa?
Yeah.
And vice
yeah.
versa.
I mean, I've read a decent number of blogs by you that involve...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I start rambling on the blog and then it just goes on and on and on and on by the time that I'm like, shut up already. And... So I have written a great, blathered on about my opinions on it a lot.
Well, this is a podcast, so you can blather on.
Yeah, but
like 8 hours.
I think the big thing now that I'm thinking of is the pacing. I think is the biggest difference, and probably everything kind of boils down to that of when you get control of when you can, you know, insert story stuff versus. When the player has control, because I keep reading the game news sites and message boards and everything. You always get like the headlines, and it's always an interview with somebody. It's like there was one of them that was the guy from BioShock, whose name I forget.
Ken Levine.
Yeah, there was a big one. He's like, people don't care about your stupid story.
And right. He says that a lot.
Yeah, that was the headline that went around everywhere, and. It's like, yeah, it makes it. It's good for press and you know gets you quoted a lot. But the message in there was basically, you know, just don't try to tell your 300 page design document inside a game, which is not the same thing as, you know, games shouldn't have stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
well, I think there's a certain amount of implicit sort of irony that he intends coming from the guy who wrote BioShock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But. I don't know. I think part of it too is just, I think the whole reason I've been going on about it on my blog is just me being overreactionary because
got it.
There are a few people who are very vocal about the, you know, games or stories don't belong in games at all. They're like completely opposite. And one of my ex bosses frequently goes on my blog and says, no, you're completely wrong about this. And story has no place in games. That if you want to tell a story, make a movie. If you want to have interesting game mechanics, make a video game. And also if you ever say, you know, the game's going to have cool stories in them, then that gets, the interpretation of that is, well, you know, games that don't have stories in them suck. And of course, you know, obviously not every game needs to have mm-hmm. a story to it. I don't think you need Tetris adventures or anything like that, but, it's weird how there seems to be this disconnect of people like trying to branch out and saying that they should be all about mechanics or they should be, you know, more and more narrative like. And we've seen that neither one, works great. I mean, luckily we've already rejected the games you were talking about earlier, all the 3DO interactive.
Right. There's no burn cycles anymore.
Yeah. So, I mean, and everybody's, you know, kind of, you know, everybody still remembers that those days darkly and doesn't want to go back to the whole, you know, 9-disc. Barely interactive adventure game. And of course, you know, stuff like GTA 4, everybody says that, Now it's completely sandbox mode. You can do anything you want in the game. And this is the future of games. This is what all games are going to be like. And I'm thinking
the New York Times.
Yeah. And,
of course, the story itself in that game is 100% linear with maybe two or three branches.
Yeah. Exactly. And the biggest problem that I have with GTA 4 in particular is that, I'm, you know, driving around doing stuff and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be great. I can, I can do missions wherever I want. And I actually recognize that place from when I lived in Manhattan. And this is perfect. And, I'm playing along and then I come into the guys. This is a spoiler for very early in the game, so I don't think it's that big a deal. But coming in, my cousin is all pissed off because, like, his boss is sleeping with his girlfriend. And my first thought was, oh, great, okay, you know, they're both dicks, so I got to decide which one I hate right. the least.
You already started imposing more gaminess on this game than existed.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you know, I get to make a choice finally. And then my character all of a sudden says, okay, I will kill him.
Right.
And like, what? I was sure that I'd missed something, that I'd like made some choice earlier in the game.
There was a quick time event.
Yes.
You were trying to click through the dialogue and you did the wrong thing.
Exactly. Do you kill him or do you tell him to go screw himself? And so, I mean, obviously we're not there yet. And I think there's just a lot of it is what slant you put on it.
I mean, there seem to be kind of there seems to be like a divergence a bit among games. And you've got the one arm, which is exemplified by stuff like Gears of War or Uncharted. You know, that sort of aim very explicitly to be like that roller coaster where yeah. this is, in fact, like a movie. We're trying to make this as close to a Hollywood action film as possible. And one of the interesting things about that approach is that those games tend to be really light on actual story elements, despite the fact that they're basically feeding the player every element of sort of pacing and like narrative delivery. They tend to have Hollywood action movie-esque stories where it's like right. only really there to sort of propel the character forward. And then you've got the other branch, which is sort of, I mean, I guess as you described something like GTA 4, which is maybe more like that than GTA 4 would want to admit, but, you know, does it in a way that at the pacing at least is more up to the player from a structural standpoint, and or, you know, something like BioShock, which is more segmented. And that side of it is the one I'm more interested in, but it also doesn't seem like there's a lot of evolution going on there right now.
Yeah, which is sort of unfortunate. Is people are, it seems like people are going more down the path of how to make it where you can get these shallow scenes in any order that you want.
Right.
Instead of how to make the shallow scenes actually relevant
yeah.
to the games. Because there seems to be this sense of, well, it's all about the gameplay, so that's all we're going to put our energy into. And so you get games like, you know, like Dead Space, which again, I think was a, you know, great game mechanic and really novel game mechanic. And just whenever a story event was about to happen, I would dread it because I would know how much of a downer it was going to be. It was like, oh, great. Now you're doing the right. evil scientists.
Yeah, right. No, that was like painfully predictable. Pretty much everything that happened in the actual story of that game was, fairly terrible.
But and another example, just while I'm thinking of it, is like in BioShock, which I thought just did, you know, stunning things for the first half of the game. And then there's one bit where like somebody dies behind a window. So there's several bits like that, but one in particular where somebody dies behind a window and like in their last thing, they write numbers up on the fog and the glass. And I was like, I had this weird Pavlovian thing where I was like, oh boy, I get to type something in.
Or, right. Yeah. It's like, if this was System Shock 2.
Right. But it's not that I really wanted to type something in. It was just, I want to do something more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Than
I agree.
Just be there.
I have that all the time. I'm constantly, when stuff like that happens, I get so excited and I like scramble for a piece of paper and write it down. And
you know what the saddest thing is when the character then types it in for you when you click on the.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That happens every single time. Like you never have to ever take any initiative. It's understandable to an extent. Like, it would suck to an hour later be like, oh shit, are you fucking serious? I have to go back there and like find that number. Like, how do you, that's the problem with games. It's like, how do you ensure the player is going to sort of have that initiative? But I do get really disappointed. I get so excited. I'm like, oh my God, it's great. In fact, I actually just took out a pen and clicked it open right now, like in my excitement.
The thought of it. Yeah,
and I get out, I write it down. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like on top of this. I got this game. Like, I'm 8764. Gonna type that into the key card, and then
and you're saying it over and over yourself. 8764.
Right. Exactly. 8764. And then I get there, and my guy's like, I know that number.
Right. Actually, the like perfectly hand animated fingers right, that type in that code. That's although, the same code for everyone.
There was a moment in Fallout 3 where you actually do have to. To know a number and type it in, and I was actually really pleased with that. That made, like, because when it first happened, I had the opposite reaction. I've been so trained by these games, and I'm like,
oh fuck, this he's gonna remember that.
And I was like, oh, well, he's just gonna type it in. I waited for my character to start typing it in, and I'm like, activate. Nothing's happening. Weird. And then I died. And I'm like, whoa, crazy. It was really weird. I had to like dredge up those habits and then type it in myself. But I was glad they did that. It was cool.
I just that's my biggest annoyance lately is that there's so much handholding done in games, and then more and more. Another really egregious one was Half-Life Episode 3. The whole battle, the Strider battle at the end. I love that as an action sequence, but there are like a dozen tutorials before it starts. I mean, they tell you what you're going to do. They like show you a map of where you're going.
Yeah, but people still complain that was too hard. Some people,
yeah, that's what I hear. And
that's where I stopped playing that episode. Actually, I still haven't beat it. I'm retarded.
Oh man, you should beat it.
I lost my save game.
I guess that's the danger with that kind of thing. I mean, if you make it, you know, if you require too much input, the player's just gonna say, forget it.
Also, I'm gonna take a little leap here and get like this is slightly different, but it's sort of it's not about storytelling.
Taking a leap,
but yeah, I do want to kind of bring this up. And maybe you guys don't feel this way, but because it's a little insulting maybe to some people, but like, do you guys feel like in some forms, like in, for example, in film or like books, you know, when you're a kid, you watch fucking goofy stuff and it's fun and you read goofy books and whatever, that's fine. Like that's how you sort of like what you enjoy doing. You want to watch just like whatever stuff. But, and then you get older and like you sort of start to feel like you can take on like some more complex material. Maybe you'll read, you know, you start reading chapter books and you get a little older and, you know, like eventually you move on to like more interesting stuff. And then in high school, they force you to read a bunch of stuff that you think is boring. But then maybe later on you go back to some of that stuff and it's actually interesting. And like, maybe eventually you get to the point where you enjoy that from time to time. And like you watch films that are about things that are interesting.
I see where this
talk
is going.
About. Yeah. With games, like why is it that the default is you get older and then apparently like adults, now,
just chill shit.
Like that, or to the even more extreme, it's like the way to market to adults is to have them play a game that doesn't require them to do anything except match three blocks. And it's like, wait, what? Really? Like that's what you're going to do? Like,
yeah.
I read these articles, like the guy from Newsweek, whose name I don't know how to pronounce.
And Guy Kroll.
Yeah. He'll write these articles complaining about how, you know, the game's, crap, that's one of those words that I've always read but don't know how to pronounce. Infantilize?
Go
on.
Proceed.
But you know, there's lots of complaints about how, you know, game companies still treat us like children. Mm-hmm. But then we have these games that are getting increasingly hand-holding, and they think that the way that you interact with it is just Twitch-based stuff. Or, like you say, you know, doing
just like the most casual ever casual. Like to an extent, it makes sense if you're sort of like introducing someone cold as an adult because they haven't had that same progression of the equivalent of like reading golden books, then reading chapter books, then reading a novel. Like they haven't had the equivalent of that in game terms, but there isn't actually an equivalent of that in game terms, really. Like the same games that you play when you're 8 these days seem to be basically the same. Like a lot of 8-year-olds play the exact same games that a 35-year-old serious game reviewer would play and give a 9.5 to.
Yeah, like when those two kids from elementary school I was talking about last week came in, they kept asking me if I was playing all these games, and it was just most of the games that we talk about, at least most of the console games that we've been talking about for the last couple months. It's
I guess I am.
If I didn't say fuck all the time, I would tell you maybe to listen to this podcast.
I mean, and it's like there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Like part of what's cool about games is that there is a certain sort of joy of just the interactivity and the mechanics that is less sort of age and knowledge specific than sort of books or movies or anything. But doesn't that seem weird to an extent? Like if all I ever watched was the same stuff 8-year-olds were watching on TV, I would go crazy. Like, why does that work in games? Why aren't there things that sort of scale up appropriately? Is the audience just not big enough at a certain age?
I think it just works that I am a big fan of The Sims too, and so I've found myself, you know, spending, you know, hours and hours at a time, like 4 or 5 hours playing The Sims 2. And while I'm playing it, it's like, this is very engaging. You know, I feel like I've always got some little task to do, and I'm going forward. When I played WoW, that was the same way. You always have these little goals that you set for yourself. And then you get to the end of it and you look and it's not like, it's not even the same feeling of, oh, it's, you know, 2 a.m. and I just watched this great movie. It's 2 a.m. and I watched other people peeing all day.
Sounds like my kind of game.
Yeah. And I mean, and I love the game, but I don't feel like I've accomplished anything at the end of it because I never really have to think at all.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem for me, is you can be completely engaged in a game and never have to think.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
I see a connection here to the thing that you wanted to bring up before, but
what?
The just your rant on MMOs, is just how.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, like that they exist purely as a time sink.
Yeah.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. Or like sort of a veneer for social interaction, which I think is that to me is more valid. But the actual just underlying mechanic of MMOs is we want to allow you to consume time doing essentially nothing for hours and hours and hours. And of course, the response to that is, well, that's what every game is, or that's what every entertainment of any form is. But I don't know. There is sort of a difference after I finish reading a great book or watch like a really good movie where I'm like, there's something about that will like,
that and a multi-hour fetch quest met with, combined like, with a turn-based sort of attack
button
pressing.
Allowed a lady in a hut to create 18 pies based on the intestines of a boar. Like, that is in fact a quest.
And everybody's like, well, and like, yeah, the empire and it's, part and it's of that the game. Veneer of social interaction that you talked about, but the social interaction is, hey, I know where the lady is who's got the 14 pies.
Right.
I think if you get far enough in, you talk to those people socially, it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I used back in like
social.
Well, I mean, I will say that back in like
I have Sims to talk
when
to.
When I played World of Warcraft, I used it largely as a like verbal chat room with my actual real life friends. But really, that could be any game or any other
when
form of communication.
When just talking to them becomes too boring, you can talk to them while killing boars
exactly.
to make pies.
Like, inevitably, you're sort of in this weird halfway point between like, oh yeah, there's a guy over there. Wait, careful, you're drawing aggro. So anyway, what'd you do yesterday? Oh, you know, like, oh, this is fucking sweet. Like, it's like, you know, it's as close as you can get to the sort of Zelda, like, sort of disgusting human mentality while still being in the company of other people. Like, you know, I don't know. I think, and a lot of time when you bring stuff like this up, people get really defensive about, well, games are just there to have fun, and all they're there, and like, I can go to books or films for those other
things.
Eagle
eye.
I want to see. Yeah.
On the internet, it's always, it's all or nothing. You can't have anything between.
Right,
so,
exactly.
If you say, you know, I think, you know, it'd be nice if I felt like I accomplished something at the end of a game, and they'd be like, you ate Peggle.
You want to take our game? You want to take the fun games away? That's it, right? Exactly. You want to take them all away? What the fuck is wrong? I like my video games.
It's like internet McCarthyism.
Like, what do you think? I'm going to like shut down Activision?
Hunt down
like,
the gaming communists.
Yeah. It's so weird. That's the thing. I mean, that's the same paranoia that has erupted with the Nintendo Wii and like all the stuff
like
that gets
music
like,
games.
Right.
It's yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What's going to happen to the games where you actually there's guns or some kind of dialogue? I mean, what happens to
no
those
one's going to learn how to play a guitar?
yeah. Everyone's going to give up music.
Yeah. Well, it's funny actually, because wasn't there an article recently that?
Oh yeah, that was like Guitar Center said that this holiday season they had like a 20% upswing in actual guitar and drum kit sales, and they did a survey, and it was like apparently largely because people got excited about playing real instruments after playing Rock Band.
Probably
Guitar
what that
Hero.
Really means is you'll be even more irritated by the horrible renditions of Stairway to Heaven in Guitar Center. But you know,
in your apartment, you thought it was annoying when that guy downstairs was clacking on his original Rock Band drum kit. Now he's got real drums.
Yeah, right.
So hope you're happy now, you fucking ass.
maybe one of those guys will actually be a real guy. But you know, so. You know, so the moral of that story is that obviously I don't actually think we shouldn't have, you know, like all these games that we talk about in every podcast. Like, I still want to play those games, but I do feel like there's some kind of weird, like, disconnect void. Yeah, that is just
felt that for years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a technique it's that works yeah, in the interactive medium that doesn't work in film.
Sadly, that is something that apparently works in film and doesn't work in video games.
Yeah,
we've answered your question. Making real
that was the longest answer.
In a cynical, the most yeah. cynical way imaginable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the difference of how you get engaged in one or the other. And yeah. And it's really not all that different because the, you know, I can go watch a Die Hard movie and completely enjoy it and not.
Well, right. Anything. I'm not saying there isn't, I'm not saying there aren't the equivalent of that in films. I'm just saying there's also like a whole other category of films.
When the Wing Commander movie came out, I saw it for some reason because I wasn't a big Wing Commander fan, but a lot of my friends.
We had a Jake meet to get together.
A lot of my friends were really into Wing Commander. Like they bought a sound blaster and wanted to hear it talk, so they got Wing Commander, and then it turned out to be good. But anyway, so we saw the Wing Commander movie, and the guy sitting in the seat right in front of me, whenever anyone would fire their gun in their ship, the guy in front of me would like go and like shake violently in his seat. Like as if he was manning like the gun on the ship, and like when ships would fly around, he would sort of move around, and when things would explode, he would like shake around.
Star Tours must have blown that guy's goddamn mind.
That's true.
But the future of interactive entertainment. That is,
put no more guy in the seat in front of you, and right. So, but he was playing. He was watching Wing Commander. I guess
he was playing it
in a way that you might play it.
Yeah.
In your mind.
Not, in your mind.
Hopefully maybe you played Wing Commander like that as well, which would be amazing.
Man, speaking of that, somehow I recently went to I met with the physics guys, like the AGA, like former AGA. They're currently now owned by Intel.
Right.
And Nick, did you meet with them recently?
No, I
didn't. Well, anyway, so
neither did I.
So I,
I'm sorry.
They have these drivers now that automatically create stereoscopic effects in 3D games. So you put on these like polarized glasses that they have. They're not the red and blue ones. The same.
They're like the ones I was talking about earlier at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you put these on and it just interpret like it infers from the actual geometry that it's rendering sort of the depth, and then you can actually there's an actual option where you can dial up the depth to be more and more, like apparently as your eyes get accustomed to it
you can make it more extreme,
right, until eventually it becomes more real,
until your head explodes.
until you start getting extreme migraines. But it was pretty interesting. It was like, I don't know, it seems like the kind of thing that companies release, they try to release every once in a while and like nobody actually buys it. But, you know, it's an interesting thing to try, though. I played Left 4 Dead with that, and it was interesting. I don't remember the names of the campaign in that game, the campaigns in that game, but, you know, there's the one that's outdoors in the forests, and there's the rope bridge and stuff, and having just, like, all those layers of trees sort of get progressively more distant in a more, like, physical way was interesting. And
did it improve your aim?
No, it didn't really. Haven't really.
What, did it make it more visceral?
Were you immersed?
Visceral. I was immersed in an immersive world of visceral immersion.
Did it blow you away?
It blew me away. IGN.com.
It will blow you away.
Yeah, but it was interesting. You know, it was kind of cool. I don't know if it's the kind of thing I would actually buy, like, with money, but, you know. It was interesting. Like, I apparently,
it's not the actual thing I would buy with money.
Well, if it was expensive, you know, I don't know how expensive it is. We'll see. I don't think it's out yet, but I think it's coming out during CES.
This is a driver?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Well, the drivers are free, obviously, but the actual glasses you need to buy.
Are they really just the polarized glasses? I mean, could you go see The Nightmare Before Christmas in 3D and then take home those polarized 3D glasses and just have them?
Possible.
Well,
or did it have some sort of robot inside?
They have active electronics in it. There's like a chip.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a little USB thing you plug in. I think it's USB that's what allows you to adjust the depth.
I had 3D glasses like that Wii thing.
What?
Oh, good.
No, it's on PC.
But there's a Wii demo that somebody did.
Oh, the head tracking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy stuff. Yeah. But,
apparently not. It's not like that.
No, it's not. It's not at all. But it was cool. I mean, actually, you know what? At the same meeting, I played the PhysX-enabled version of Mirror's Edge, like the PC game.
Oh, that's one that has the plastic tarps that rip in half?
Right, right. Yeah, right. The tarp.
Yeah.
And new tarp physics.
Yeah.
That's a sticker.
But that was
tarp physics.
will blow you away. tarp realistically blown in the wind.
Tarp physics sounds like a character that's in Tech War.
What?
Some cheesy 80s sci-fi story.
Yeah.
Tarp physics, private eye.
Yeah, okay, I see it.
I can see that. Interesting. So fascinating. But it was fun.
That's actually the high ranking IP that will be starring in Mirror's Edge 2. Tarp Physics PI is the new character.
It's got spies. Yeah. When they left those out of Resident Evil 5, that left an opening there in the spy game genre. Yep. Mirror's Edge 2 starring Tarp
Physics Private Eye. No,
Resident Evil 5 has the Tarp QuickTime events, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We love QuickTime events. Sorry, I'm trying to think of what a Tarp QuickTime event would be.
There's like a tarp falling on you and you press a button.
Press A a lot.
Your guy just like bursts through it.
It blows up and it makes it
to ripple dynamically. It was cool though. It was actually like genuinely more, you know, physics-y.
More visceral?
It was more
visceral.
I don't know if
I would
say that.
Was it in 3D also? I mean, like with the glasses?
Actually, it's funny because it was, but I didn't play that version because I played
Your mind would have been too blown.
You will be extra blown away. No, the only reason is because they did the physics demo first before they revealed that they were also showing me the 3D glasses. Mm. So then rather than going back to play the same game, I played Left 4 Dead instead.
So the whole time were you thinking, thank God that is just on the screen, because if Tarp Physics that realistic were out in the world with me,
yeah,
I would be totally freaking
my
out.
My brain would in fact explode. An explode mode would be applied to my brain.
So is Tarp Physics the successor to Seesaw Physics? Like, every game with a physics engine had a seesaw section.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now there's just going to be guys ripping out of tarps, shooting plastic sheets.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've seen that.
A guy slicing through with a razor blade.
If you've seen a trailer, there was sort of a fair amount of that.
Yeah, it was just like,
went out
leap
of
through
way.
A tarp. What happens when the guy shoots through it and then it hits you and you have to rip through the bullet hole in the tarp?
Yeah.
That's what I've always wondered.
Well, you'll find out on January from Mirror's Edge. But I guess I don't know. It's the kind of thing that is cool to see. I mean, it just makes the world just feel sort of more vibrant, I guess. Yeah. Visceral, if you will.
Yep. So we're ready for the next question here?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, are we possibly just done with reader mail because we just spent a half hour talking about visceral physics?
Yeah, maybe we are. Yeah, we probably should be done with it because the other questions are really long.
The other questions are long.
Yeah,
they are really long.
Man, we don't want to deal with that.
We have a game suggestion.
Uh oh.
I mean,
all right, let's hear a game suggestion.
We could
just
read
like
that.
A pitch, or
yeah, a pitch of a game.
Yeah. Okay.
All well, right. Idle Thumbs has become a venture capital firm, so right. We'll also fund.
All right. So we might very well
questions
fund
at
idlethumbs.net. All right. So here, this is from David. You should make a Hancock game, but make the graphics really good. It could be as good as Spider-Man, Iron Man, or any other superhero game if the graphics are good. I'd buy it, and so would my friends, and most of them, and well, a lot of them, and a lot of other people too. So what do you guys think of David's idea there?
Hancock game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thumbs up? Thumbs down?
I think I'd only get it if a lot of my friends would play it.
Yeah. Well, he actually has a section about that. He says, I'd buy it, and so would my friends all, well, most of them, and a lot of other people, too.
Oh, okay. So most of his friends, and then the ones of his friends that wouldn't.
I would buy it.
It looks like
other people.
I don't know. Moving on to winners.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, real quick, we only got one entry for the Little Big Planet thing.
Yeah,
so
everyone else who started making one, you're full of shit, apparently, because only Kaboom ZZZ made one. He made
we
it
got
better.
A bunch of promises that we were getting levels, but only one completion. Better. So he actually
it's a way better level now.
Yeah, he actually went above and beyond the Call of Duty to revise his level.
Above the Call of Duty. Because you get it, because like Senior Super Douche was the previous boss in the last generation, but now it's got way more stuff.
Yeah.
That was your joke, right?
Yes.
This one goes beyond Call of Duty to include spinning.
Are you
going to
explain that
box?
Again?
Yeah, okay. there's like spinning alarm lights that you swing on for some reason.
Wow, this is no one's going to understand what you're talking about.
Okay, sorry. The level is great. It now the actual final boss is now a fat guy sitting on his couch playing Twilight Princess who flings electric Wii remotes at you from his the sloppy position on his chair.
We couldn't figure out how to
unbeatable.
Kill him.
Yeah,
he is a behemoth.
He might be unbeatable because he just throws a million electric Wii remotes at you until you die.
Yeah.
It looks like you can push rocket-powered TVs at him or something, but we couldn't figure out how it worked.
One of ours fell over and
I'm sure it's totally great.
We'll try it again after
we're
this.
We're crap at games that are made by you.
But anyway, so that was Kaboomzy. He definitely wins some stuff. We'll contact him. We don't really know how we're going to divvy this stuff up, but we'll send him some things, I guess. So well done to that guy. That was really impressive, actually.
Yeah. So check that out. Little Big Planet. Just look
for Kaboom ZZZ.
Yeah.
And you'll find a Halo level of his, and then you look for more levels by him, and you'll find Battle Thumbs. So, sweet.
It's an ARG.
It's an ARG. There's a little ARG that we just laid out there. So here are the some of the entries that we sort of randomly picked, I guess.
Oh, yeah. We should tell people what this contest was in case they don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, 4 weeks ago, we decided that it would be kind of amusing if you guys came up with some flavors for Ultra Boost, which is apparently our unofficial sponsor. They're a non-existent company who's the competitor to Gamer Grub, the extreme sports snacks.
Gaming snacks.
Extreme sports. Extreme game. They're
BMXing and stuff. Ours is the competitor.
Yeah, extreme gamer snacks. So yeah. people send in a billion Ultra Boost flavors.
Yeah, here are some of them. And we'll just sort of, we're going to just kind of pick these as we go dynamically. It's like emergent gameplay. So Sandy MacArthur suggests Ultra Boost Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix Special Champion Hyper Alpha EX versus Zero Plus Berry. Maybe a little much there. Ultra Boost Boost Ultra. I actually like that one. I didn't notice that one before. Ultra Boost Buzz Boost. Ultra Boost Rectal Rampage, Ultra Boost Twitch, Ultra Boost Goomba Sweat, Ultra Boost Pipe Dream Cream, and Ultra Boost 2.
Yeah, I would give points to Ultra Boost 2.
I agree. Yeah. I think Ultra Boost 2, very clever. Johnny Law suggests Turbo Retro Nostalgia Moon Pie Crunch, Next Gen Brown and Bloomin' Butterscotch, which I really like.
Brown and Bloomin'.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, that's the best.
Halo Haters Hoppin' Mad Habanero, Crappy Console Port Carob Surprise, and LAN Party Aftermath Flat Beer and Cold Pizza Swirl, which I like that one mainly for the like sort of visual imagery
it
creates.
Yeah, there's a lot of imagery going on there.
Yeah.
Nick Grayscale Selpa suggests...
It's a weird name.
Yeah. Yes. OMG WTF BBQ Barbecue, which, you know, there's some internet in there. First Person Fruit Punch, Watermelon Headshot, LARPer Licorice, Roful Raspberry, ROFL Raspberry, Sneak Attack Sausage, HPB Hamburger.
Oh,
Sneak
winner.
Attack Sausage. That was definitely
man.
A winner.
Oh, man. I don't even know what that means.
I think we know what it means.
Yeah, well...
HPB hamburger, that's pretty classic. Who remembers what an HPB is?
Yeah, no kidding.
What a hamburger.
Combo Breaker Crunch Cereal.
That's pretty good. Why is it a cereal?
I don't know.
Why not? Spinoff.
Brian Berkelman writes, Barbie Game Magic Chocolate. That sounds really horrible. And, like, I can't figure out why. Pop Cap Turkish Delight Pathologic Blood Clot. Jesus.
That's actually, sadly, sick. That's been taken by Gamer Grub. We can't use that one.
Yeah, trademarked.
Matt Foley writes...
I thought that was going to be a flavor.
Yeah.
Matt Foley Boost. Ponage. Ponage. Is that how you pronounce that word, ponage?
Let's say it is.
Pwnage.
When it has pure in front of it, it's pronounced ponage, isn't it? When it's that show?
What show?
Never mind.
Okay. Pwnage Peppermints and Fixed Camera Fruit Bowls. Rody suggests 8-bit Retro Chic Rhubarb. Steve Farrell suggests this is a hardcore entry. Champion Japanese Ping Pong Player Focus, which is sort of okay, but then he goes on to elaborately spell this out. This would be a green tea energy flavor. The side of the can would read something like, if you need focus and reaction times equivalent to a Japanese ping pong player, then you need Japanese ping pong player focus. The name is excessive and so is the energy. Which is pretty good. He even includes ingredients like green tea, ginseng, guarana, taurine, and notes that it can be made in a diet version using Splenda. So that guy gets points
so
for
that. That submission is extreme.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the whole name, actually.
Adam W., Achievement Whore Whiskey. That's pretty good. Three Red Lights Punch. I like that one, too.
Yeah.
Crummy suggests Mud. Pretty good in its conciseness. Left for Bread. And Hot Scoops. You know, how can you not? I mean, Hot Scoops. How can you not give
it to
that? I
think I get something probably.
Yeah. Melkor suggests Beat 'em Up Boysenberry, Raspberry Random Encounter, Minibus Mayhem, and Uncanny Valley Cream Soda. I think Uncanny Valley Cream Soda is actually remarkably close to the tone we established in our own original Ultra Boost flavors, I think.
Yeah.
And then Mark McMurky closes us out with, I'd like to have Shaq's ass flavor. He also links us to a YouTube video of Shaquille O'Neal apparently demanding that Kobe O'Bryant tell me what my ass tastes like or something. Like, what? Is this a thing that's real? Like, apparently this is a thing that occurred in real life.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that guy gets a prize.
No.
I don't think so.
Can't get a prize.
He might get the Gamer Grub bag.
Yeah, he might get the weird sort of semi-consolation prize.
You guys could try to actually recreate Shaq's ass flavor and send that to him.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, that is.
That cannot be sent through the U.S. Postal Service.
Is that count as a carcinogen or is it explosive?
All of the above. All right, well.
Oh, we should talk about the open beta for that thing.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I don't remember what it's called.
Plain sight.
I'm an ass. A lot of the guys in the UK who used to write for Idle Thumbs, including actually at the moment, those guys who do the Idle Thumbs UK podcast, are working on a game at a company called Beatnik Games. The game is called Plain Sight. It's a multiplayer game that they're doing in XNA.
I think they claim it's the first commercially produced XNA game that isn't sort of part of the community games thing.
Yeah. It's an online game where it sounds like you have to kill yourself in some capacity. I don't know. The art style is really cool. The gameplay looked pretty interesting. And if you go to our forums...
It's kind of like an arena brawler kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like in a weird sort of minimalistic style. It looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. If you go to forums.idlethumbs.net, they're giving away beta codes in there. So check it out.
Yep.
What's the title again?
Plain Sight. And I think they're probably planning on doing a more public unveiling sometime in the near future.
Yeah. But you heard it here first on this podcast.
Totally first.
Or probably on our forums, that was probably the first.
Sweet. All right. Yeah. So, want to close this one out?
Thanks for listening.
Oh, man. Jake is excited.
What the hell was I supposed
to
say?
He's so excited to be on the internet.
We would like to thank our special guest, Chuck Jordan, for joining us this week on Idle Thumbs.
Thanks for listening.
We're all excited, as you can tell.
Yeah. Yep. So, cool. Video games.
Yep, see you guys next week.
Is that what you were hoping for?
I actually didn't mean, I wasn't actually directing it to you. I was just saying,
Jake, you want
to
close us out?
I didn't say Jake.
Oh, you were looking at me. I thought you were talking to me.
No, I was just asking for, like, sort of seeing if you agreed.
Oh, snap. It's December 10th, 2008, and this was the recursive Choose Your Own Adventure opening. For Bobby Kotick wins this round, go to 18 seconds. For Did You Know Milo Notice Was a Japanese Movie, go to 24 seconds. For A Winner Is Meme, keep on listening. Everyone will turn this off.
8463.
It's December 10th, 2008, and this is the recursive opening. The recursive Choose Your Own Adventure opening. For and what? And this was? this was the recursive Choose Your Own Adventure opening. For Bobby Kotick wins this round, go to 18 seconds. For Did You Know Milo Notice Was a Japanese Movie, go to 27 seconds. For A Winner Is Meme, kill yourself.